You're listening to Control Talk Now, the Smart Buildings Podcast.
With the man, the myth, the legend. The legend. Ken Smyers and Eric Stromquist.
Control Talk Now, the weekly podcast with building automation and smart building control news you can use.
Now, here's Eric.
Hi, welcome to Control Talk Now, your smart buildings video cast and podcast for the week ending June 25th, 2017. This is episode 229, where we talk about all things control. Smart controls, dumb controls, pneumatic controls. If it's in a building or it's in an industrial plant or a hospital or whatever, we're going to talk about it. But if you're going to talk about it, you got to have the man, the myth, the legend, the one, the only, Kenny Smyers, the controls man from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Kenny, welcome to the show, big dog.
Well, thank you very much, Eric. We're going to take this a little bit slower because, I mean, we're not in a hurry. We're not traveling. We don't have any suitcases to unpack or pack or prepare. So we got a nice few weeks back at the home base and get a chance to reset and talk about some of the extraordinary things that have occurred in our industry and some of the places we've been to.
Dude, I tell you what, we have been like a whirlwind tour, you know, and I think it started back in Manchester. We were over covering the EZI Global Conference, and you can see a lot of videos that we have on Control Trends regarding that. And that was just a spectacular trip. Kenny, I did a couple of detours there. If you go to Control Trends, you can see where we went to Edinburgh for a couple of days, as well as Liverpool doing a Beatles sort of tour. And the reason we did that, Kenny, is, as you know, we think we're in a smart building controls renaissance. And so we sort of drew a parallel in Edinburgh to the Scottish Enlightenment. Mm-hmm. And the Liverpool with the Beatles, man, because the Beatles changed it all. So there were a couple of commonalities that we sort of see with that, and that's thinking differently, taking stuff that has already been accepted, sort of turning it on its ear, taking the best of what's been accepted and what's working, and then adding new stuff to it. And so I think that theme continues. What do you think, Kenny?
Sure. I mean, the whole thing to make things interesting, and I think that's another major trend that we're on, is how to, you know, keep making our industry as exciting and putting its best foot forward. But there's a lot of great examples that we can make analogies. I was read a book here recently. It said that one of our greatest tools to relate and communicate is to create an analogy so people can follow your thought process to the next step. And we went to you know, Scotland, and we got to really get pumped up with the Enlightenment period. You know, it was just exciting to travel these places, the actual pubs where these guys actually sat down at tables and discussed the things that would become, you know, staple parts of our you know, our economy. You know, Adam Smith, Wealth of Nations, and then David Hume, you know, on philosophy about, you know, morals being a self-imposed instead of a church-imposed type thing. So, and then how the Scottish taught their children to read and write at an early age, and then instead of just reading the Bible, they also began to read all this stuff, and they became one of the most educated countries in the world. So we realized that our industry is getting like that. We're exposing more and more information, more and more innovation into an industry that's been kind of quiet. It's a big, powerful industry worth billions of dollars every year. The revenues are, you know, guesstimated $130 billion a year. And we don't have enough people coming into it. So we're really pushing, you know, making these analogies possible to better explain to people and share some of the great things about our industry. And when we traveled, it was just like a natural analogy, you know, the Beatles especially.
Right. You know, just well, hang on. I got to comment on some stuff here because, man, you're saying a whole lot, and I think you're right on with it. So, you know, it's interesting because I think the printing press was where the cat was sort of let out of the bag, right? Because once people could learn to read and you could print, I think an analogy there might be kind of like our open systems, like what Niagara and Tritium created, right? When that happened, it was sort of like the printing press, right? Now everybody could participate. It was very difficult to lock down things, control knowledge. And I think in our industry, I think, you know, Niagara is akin to the printing press, and that really allowed systems to become open.
Yeah, I think that's a great analogy because, you know, now as we talk more and more about, you know, the events we've been to, it stacks on, you know, so you get that nice foundation. We understand where we came from. So a good way to move forward is to know where you came from and to then realize that in the increment of time, we saw the Enlightenment period, human nature and human thought and everything was stilted during the Dark Ages. And all of a sudden the Renaissance occurred. And we covered that with that Paris visit and just said how, you know, there's these buildings that are just magnificent. percent, you know, where all this magical thought come from? And it came from, you know, good old fashioned hard work and philosophers getting together and sharing information. So the meetings we've been to, what do we see? We see networking going on at the highest level, the RealCon place, you know, the ControlsCon, real high level networking where information is being disseminated so quickly and rapidly. UK, we go and visit EZIO and we see it on a global basis. You know, it is so interesting to be in a room where somebody's from Australia, New Zealand, Indonesia, Malaysia, England, Detroit, you know, where Rick Jones came from, Utah, Salt Lake City, you and I, and then hearing the conversation regarding the way our industry is evolving and how quickly we're being seized by this technology and who's going to come out ahead and how just changing everything.
I think you're right on it, Kenny. So, you know, one of the big things I think with all these, the printing press was disruptive technology. And I think we've talked about this a lot, you and I, as well as with Ken Sinclair and other people in our industry, Ken Sinclair from automatedbuildings.com, that we're in an extremely disruptive period. And it's disruptive for two things. First of all, it's kind of like you got the printing press invented with open systems. But secondly, the technology is changing so, so rapidly. You have so many new players coming into the game. So, you know, as a company, I mean, we come from the traditional building automation, you know, side of things, as you know, and you know, it used to be that the product life cycle was 10, 15, 20 years. It was all based on territory. It was all based on the vendor setting expectations for you. You basically went in and said, I'm the Honeywell guy, or I'm the Johnson guy, or I'm the Allerton guy, or whatever. And that was it. That was a brand you sold. It was proprietary. So, you know, the strategy was always get your products in, because once you get them in, the customer is vendor locked or contractor locked. And all that's changed. So my question, Kenny, and I think the question that we all struggle with, whether you're an integrator, a consulting engineer, or a manufacturer, is how do you differentiate now, right? Because the pricing is very, very competitive. I mean, as you and I know as distributors, I mean, our margins are at rock bottom. I mean, they can't go any lower. So the products are great. The tech support's great. How do you differentiate? I mean, what's the secret sauce now, Kenny, that's going to have you be successful in this renaissance period we're talking about?
Well, I point back to the recent visits that we had in Manchester, Detroit, and San Diego at RealCon, and hearing how these people, the big people, are dealing with this whirlwind state of disruption and change. And there's a lot of good things that are happening, and there's equally bad. But I remember you asked Scott Cochran, and you asked Brian Turner, two of the great distributor representations in our industry, and that is to stay ahead. You got to go. I like Scotty Cochran's analogy about the rainbow, about taking old timers and mating them at the workplace with the younger people so they can get that work ethic going and get some of that hindsight. So we're seeing different innovations that you have to move quickly, and you have to move with confidence with the right people. So You have to reinvest in your organization and yourself. You have to get the training you need. You have to learn how to do certain things, whether it's a new way to do your computer networking or routing or your iPhone or new feature, a new app. You have to stay on top of stuff. And then two, you have to have the relationships. So we're seeing a different style of relationships where you can't be a jack of all trades and master at none like you could before. Now you have to specialize and then use the other available resources and share those resources. So instead of everybody having their own, you know, staff of this guy, this guy, this guy, this girl, this girl, this girl, and then everybody tries to do that, and you have this duplicity in an organization, you're starting to see organizations share resources and pool resources. And we're seeing a lot of like virtual business entities, you know, that are coming in for a project, for a job. We're seeing the true emergence of the master systems integrators, where these guys have the staff and they have the wherewithal to sustain an overhead, and then they're selling those services. So you're going to see controls and systems as a service. So instead of like you said about the old proprietary methods of getting into a large customer base or establishing, you know, you used to have territories and you were responsible to develop and cultivate the sales within that territory. Well, we see the internet just totally abusing that whole concept with a new, who's ever first on the social media page, whoever comes up quickest on the search button is going to prevail in many cases. And then you said they shop for pricing. So you have all these automated, basically mechanisms and go out and find the things that people used to do. They can be found automatically. And then if there's a good reception there, you can sell it. So we're seeing people like Amazon coming in, looming in the background. You know, they just bought Whole Foods for how many billions, and they just devalued the real estate market by 5%. The big guys, Walmart, Target, they thought that food industry was stable. And it was one of the last things that was a, you know, the most, one of the most sustainable industries. And then here comes Amazon buying the whole food chain and just disrupts that chain. So I think being fleet-footed to eliminate all the duplicities in your organization and to work with people that have access to those technologies.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because I think, you know, we've talked a good bit about we're in the networked economy, and I had a teacher once, Marshall Thurber, who, you know, studied networks, every kind of network from, networks of cells in your body that create disease to create healing to business networks to terror networks or whatever. And it's a different set of rules regarding networks. It's completely different. We've talked a little bit in the past about with a network, you can never defeat a network with power. You have to infiltrate them, you know, basically. But I think we're in a networked economy. I think that's part of what we're seeing, Kenny. And one of the things our friend Jeff Halp from AI, you know, defined it, that we're in the integrity economy. You're really trading on your integrity. And Kenny, you know, you mentioned it, that we're seeing more and more people that you can't do everything. So we're seeing integrators now that are working together that 10 years ago would have been competitors, where maybe one's got a skill set that is able to do, maybe analytics and the other doesn't have that. And it's all based on trust. Okay. So I think your networking is probably your number one key thing, which makes a lot of these conferences really, really valuable. Like the EZIO conference, we've seen that grow exponentially with the number of people that are attending. And that's the other thing, Kenny, I'm saying is it's becoming a global economy. It's, and one of the great things about EZIO is you really hear integrators talk around the world and you realize that we're all really, really the same. And, it's fascinating stuff there. But hey, before we get there, a couple of shout outs. I want to mention a couple of people. Mike Swartz from Altura and Associates. I tell you what, Mike is one of the brilliant guys. He's written a couple of articles on for Ken Sinclair and automatedbuildings.com. Check him out. We've been trying to get a hold of you, Mike. We're looking for you with the cameras. We saw you at RealCom IBCOM. We saw you at a couple other events, and we just didn't get a chance to interview you, but we're hoping to get you on the show very, very soon. And then a special shout out to all our friends at Ford Motor Company. As you know, Kenny, we got to interview Paul up there, and brilliant, brilliant guy. And he said that the folks at Ford listened to the show. So we really do appreciate you guys tuning in for that. And then, of course, our friends Ken Sinclair, Therese Sullivan, Ken, automatedbuildings.com, Therese, buildingcontext.me. Because one of the things that Marshall Thurber, my teacher, used to say too, is nothing's obvious to the uninformed. And I think you alluded to it, Kenny. I think in the times we are now, it's more important than ever to stay informed.
Yeah, and you have to continue with the RealCom folks, Jim Young, Howard Berger, Lisa Woods. Shout out to them and the great job they did, because as we continue along this theme, we find out that there's residual impacts. You know, when you go out to there and you begin to this networking, and then you have calls to make, emails to catch up on, and there's sustaining business. But I think we're going to continue. We have this lull, so we can really concentrate and pick out some of the best things. Like I don't know if you can see on my left, I have the Scotland visit.
I see it.
There's Mr. Hume. And, every time I see that, I remember now, like we talked about the buildings, you know, we went into these older buildings and we're seeing how technology, you can't disturb the inside of these buildings. So like the wireless, and then we were at the EZIO and they've just introduced that FW series. It's all about wireless and how the Wi-Fi is becoming stronger, and it's got many, many, many better benefits and features. So a lot of these old time buildings that you can't disturb the walls and there's asbestos issues, we see technology being applied. So for our industry and distributors, we're seeing ourselves, it's like playing poker. You're just going to throw a discard, the three of clubs down there and pick up the jack, of hearts, because the new products are going to have more, make a bigger impact now with this new, opportunities. And I think too, we saw with our visits that as Mike Marston says with that triangle thing, there's so much more market available. In other words, in the crux of all the smart buildings and intelligent buildings we do, we see that 80% of the buildings around the world are underserviced. They don't have, an adequate building automation component that can take care and make them more energy efficient and look out for the owner's best interest, and give the occupants the best experience they can in that space. So,
no, I think you're right, Kenny, and that's another sort of underlying theme or trend that we're seeing, me and you, is that, you know, there's so many choices that although there are a lot of opportunities, especially in the race to the small space, the smaller buildings, you know, one of the things we're seeing too, Kenny, is the fact that you get too many, give people too many choices. They don't make a choice at all. There's a great book called Made to Stick by the Heath brothers, where they sort of examine this phenomenon. It's a very, very real psychological effect. And ideally, the maximum number of choices you can give somebody is three choices. You give them, start giving them a four or more, the percentages of them actually making a decision go way, way, way down. And we're seeing that people have so many choices, not just through our industry, the traditional chain, but now we've got Silicon Valley coming in. And I mean, just the shows we go to, there are more and more vendors that are showing up. So we think one of the differentiators is going to be the person or the company that has the most clear, concise message that makes it easy for a customer to make a choice is the one that's going to win. So that probably means scaling your sales approach from being more technical to being more, you know, focused on what they're trying to do and keeping it simple when you need to keep it simple. Be prepared to do the technical presentation for the people that want to know about the bits and bytes and blinking lights. But more than ever, your communication skills, I think, can be.
Did you just come up with that, bits and bytes and blinking lights?
That's actually Scott Toomey from.
I like that.
Yeah, bits and bytes and yeah, the magic smoke, right? But so you got to be able to talk about that stuff, Kenny. But I think more importantly than that, you really have to dive down. I think this is what makes a guy like Scott Cochran so effective and a guy like Paul Oswalt from ESI. They're really, really good at, instead of getting sort of overwhelmed by the really cool technology, bits and bytes and blinking lights, they really get down to the crux of, you know, what a customer's really wanting to do. And more importantly, why they want to do that. Because I think, you know, end users and consulting engineers are just a lot like us. They, you know, they get enamored with a concept or an idea because everybody else is doing it. And that may or may not make sense. So I would encourage you, anytime, Kenny, I get a chance to interview Paul Oswalt or Scott Cochran, which we do quite a bit, you can find them on Control Trends. Definitely check those out because those guys, I think, are really dialed in the new realities that we're all facing right now.
Well, you sure, right on that one. Well, Paul Oswalt, to me, is that's what's so interesting about the different professionals that we talk to is we have varying perspectives. And he pulls no punches. In other words, he's been in the business a very long time, and he's been very successful at what he does because he's, like you said, you got to start from where you want to go and work back, basically reverse engineer it. Instead of applying new technologies on top of a bad foundation, he says fix the equipment first and foremost. The 60% of the lost productivity are calls for, you know, heating and cooling issues. And if we can't fix them, then we really haven't progressed, you know, into this high level that we want to be in. So get back to basics, fix your equipment, maintain it. And then when you start saving serious amounts of money there, then you can apply these new technologies and keep that stuff, you know, at, operating as peak efficiencies and then really get down to, you know, the basics. So I like Paul Oswalt's style. He really grounds it in real world issues and doesn't let this conversation get up over the get too high up in the atmosphere before we start talking about basics. And then Brian Turner mentioned in one of the interviews that we had about there was so much technology present at the RealCom and the vendor show, and all of it was really good, and all of it really does work and functions. But for a user, you have to know what you want first. You have to really and truly have your end game set. At the end of 12 months, this is where we want to be. And then you work back towards that so you don't adopt technologies that aren't moving you forward, you know, in the right kind of sequence and progression. So that was a very interesting conversation as well.
Well, I think it is. And I think that's probably one of the criteria you want to use is you choose vendors, right? Because again, anybody can get a lower price. I mean, everybody's just throwing products out there. So, but to have somebody that can provide you or talk you through your choices and really help you understand why you're doing stuff. As a guy who's never met a camera he doesn't like, I can tell you every time I see a YouTube video, there's a new camera out there, I got to go buy it. I buy it the lowest price possible. And consequently, I got a room full of cameras that I hardly ever use. So in the end, I'm not really saving any money at all, right? I'm just spending it. It's nuts. But let's cycle back around for a minute. And you know, again, kudos to Scott Cochran and Don Cochran Supply. We were up there for their the control comm, which was in concert with their 50th anniversary of being in business. And Kenny, I tell you what, I was really, really, you know, it's a great story about a company that started with a couple of ex-Honeywell guys. I knew, you know, Don Cochran when I was a young pup getting into the business. He was sort of in his prime, as well as his partner at the time, a guy named Cal Odom. And, you know, it was interesting watching the battles that would go on between the vendors and those guys and the rest of us, and how the business has changed, and how Scott and Don Jr. have sort of taken a traditional distributor and really shifted it around. But what a great gala, and what was sort of your takes on that and impressions?
Well, you know, you got to give credit where credit's deserved. And in many cases, we look for, again, leaders. We identified a couple trends back when we started this whole thing of who was leading the distribution world. And we recognized, again, Scott Cochran and Brian Turner back in 2013 at the B.B. King Control Trends Awards, because they were basically helping us as an industry, as the building automation distributors, really take it serious that we had to make some changes, and we had to get involved, and we had to take integration to another level. And a lot of people were a little bit shaky about that because, you know, if it's not your sweet spot, you don't really want to do it a lot. So we gave them the attention, and since then they've taken the leadership. And then Scott Cochran and his brother, like you said, because Don Cochran Jr. received an award from CG&A for leadership, which I think is an unspoken, you know, we don't give enough attention to people that give a lot of selfless time for the benefit of the industry and the group. He's a very bright guy, and he helped, you know, work all the software bugs out of, you know, some of the projects that Controls Group North America was working on that we all benefited from. So here's a good picture of the event. We see Mr. Cochran, you know, celebrating with his two sons. He's got to be just so proud. And then one of the most important things they said there, that Cochran had succeeded in 50 successful years of business, but they've got the foundation to be successful for 50 more. So as our distribution world continues to evolve and morph into another industry altogether, we're going to see the most progressive, advanced companies like Cochran Supply not only survive but flourish. So I just got a real kick out of it. And when I see this, I see, you know, we had a family business that didn't make the third generation, and it's just so hard to do. So that's another challenge, is that, you know, the dynamics of a family business are just, they're very unique, and there's many books written about them. But, you know, hats off to the Cochran Supply family.
No, agreed with that. And one of the things that impressed me, they sort of in the gala went through all their employees, sort of, you know, paid some homage to them. And what impressed me more than anything is they have so many that have been around for 20, 30, 40 years. But what impressed me even more was how many they have that have been there, you know, 1 to 2 years. So they are really adding employees and building the business up. So again, that was a great experience for us to be up there at that event. And then, you know, we got to get to RealCom IBCon, Kenny. You know, we've been covering that show for a while, and it keeps getting bigger and better. And congratulations to Jim Young, Howard Berger, and Lisa Woods, like you said. They just another spectacular show with even more people there. We're seeing more systems integrators show up there. We're seeing more distributors show up there. We're seeing more consulting engineers show up there. Our good friend Donnie Walker and Steve from and Max from Newcomb & Boyd in Atlanta actually had a booth there this year, which I think just really speaks to what they're up to. But what were your takes on that show, Kenny?
Well, as big as it was, they're going to have to get a bigger venue, because I think you're right. I think we found for sure that when you get to, you know, where we need to be as an industry and where we should put our chips in the future, there's no safer place than to hear the testimony of the people, the end users and the customers, and hear what their industry thinks about our industry. And you won't get a more clear message sent to you than listening to these breakouts that we had. But the general session was huge. They had Larry Smarr gave a humorous and mind-blowing summary of technology's past, present, and future. I'll tell you what, that in itself was like, you know, going to see a movie, and because it was like science fiction. It was like so incredible, the synopsis he gave of artificial intelligence and how now the computers are beating the human mind and everything. It used to be with all the logic and all the things that you had. There was a particular game that the humans won for many, many years, and finally this computer played itself 10 million times and has beaten the human, you know, top guy. And he did the presentation there. But that was kind of spooky, because you think about it, you know, one day the computer might do the final analysis and come up with a logarithm to get rid of the worst thing on the planet, and that could be the human being. So it was a really lurching.
Well,
like,
you're comfortable.
And all of a sudden you're thinking, my goodness, is this really happening?
You know? Well, no, I think you're right, Kenny. And what part of his message is, and we know this, we interviewed Dr. Igor Mezik a while back, and he's using an algorithm that is a self-learning algorithm in the building automation side, where it's basically taking the sensor data, instead of writing the rules, it figures out the correlations and it becomes predictive, and it's self-learning is the operative word here. And when you start getting self-learning algorithms, it's unreal. And I got to tell you, this is a little bit off topic, but it's related. As you know, we went to, you know, Carlsbad after the show. You saw your daughter, and I saw our good friend Anthony Bronzo, and they're building the sex bots out there, dude. I mean, I'm listening to the radio. They're talking. The big debate out there is, and now these things are self-learning. They're becoming empathetic. And then the big debate on the radio, Kenny, is if you cheat with a sex bot, is it really cheating? So it's, you know, it's a brave new world we're entering into here. It's sort of crazy. But the other thing, tell me the story about this guy and how he's monitoring himself. You know, the wearable technology is a booming business. And of course, that gets back to sensor data that we're all using. But tell me the story. Do you remember the story you told about?
What do you call it? Jerry did it. We spelled him at RealCom Live. And you were up there and you were talking about Larry Smart. And Jerry was saying how this Larry guy is really an interesting guy. And he's so open with technology, and how he can take a very difficult, complicated subject and put it in layman's terms for us to understand. And what happened was, there's a free website where you can upload your biology. You can upload your urine samples, your feces samples. You can upload everything you want, and it will do a free analysis and get back to you after it looks at it. And they'll tell you, it basically takes your DNA apart, from what I understand, and looks for kinks in your DNA linkage and your likely avenue of how you're going to perish, whether it's cancer or whatever. So Larry Smart, he sends this up to this internet. It sends him back information. He's going to have intestinal issues involving, I believe, cancerous cells or something. And he has his team.
No, it was a kink. They figured out
in his intestine. Yeah,
he had a kink in his intestine.
But what he did was he 3D'd the internal of his body. So he basically puts nanotechnology to work, and they do a 3D composite view of his body and find out that he has his intestine has a little kink in it, and that was causing some kind of a thing to be made, or some unnatural cellular development or something. So sure enough, he goes a month later and he finds out he's got some kind of a cancer, but he already used technology to find it out. So the moral of the story is that if we keep advancing at this point, people are going to live to be 125 years old, and there'll be nothing to keep them alive to be 150, because you're going to have something go into your body, scan it while it's analyzing your DNA, find out where you're most likely to have your issues, and then start working on the new replacement parts that you'll keep yourself going and keep yourself alive, because none of your organs will break down because they can be replaced, or they can be fixed before they go bad.
Well, and I think the big takeaway for me with this was that they predicted that he was going to have this problem based on the data that got uploaded. He was able to alert his doctor, and 3 months later, when they predicted it was going to happen, he actually started to get the symptoms. They went in, and the doc goes, "Yep, this is it." They were prepared for it, so they were able to, get him in the surgery, get everything taken care of. And this might have been something that you might not have survived if you hadn't have known that. So the wearable technology, in conjunction with the building automation control system, it's all coming together. And the sensor data, I mean, I think we're pushing $17 trillion worth of sensors, I think, by the year 2025. And dude, I tell you what, man, we saw the coolest sensor line there, little wireless sensors that we kept walking by this booth, and it was just so cool. We couldn't help but look at these things. And dude, I mean, 1,000 feet through 5 layers of concrete, and these things are very, very inexpensive. I mean, that's just one example of, somebody coming from outside our industry, coming into our industry, and how's that going to affect our key players like functional devices and ACI and people like that, right?
Well, anyhow, Eric, getting back to the RealCom, the show, again, it was a crescendo. It was the high point of all the traveling we did, because it was truly the gathering of huge technology, right? close to Silicon Valley. It's the biggest customer bases, you know, CB Richard Ellis's, Jones Lang LaSalle. I mean, the who's who in the real estate and REIT markets, are, you know, people that are very concerned about how efficient they can get and really factor out that 330, 300 or the 10, 100, 1000, according to Paul, that you can get so much more, you know, benefit if you can make your space comfortable and put it in context to the people in it and make them have a better experience because they're going to be more productive, heal quicker, learn faster, whatever. And then you're really getting some productivity out of that space. And we heard some of the new stuff like a parking garage is going they're building any – the big decision with realty companies is should we build a parking garage now? Because if autonomous cars are coming, then we don't need to waste all that space and all that construction cost. But now they're building – the parking lots with in mind that that's going to be converted into more office area in the 20, 30 years period. So I think the big thing for RealCom is it's going to continue to be successful. They're going probably have to have more days because now that the word's getting out and people can see that there's real efficacy, there's real value in attending, there's going to be more people coming. And that general session was sold out. There were 1,500 people. There was standing room only. I'm thinking this is where it's at. This is like the old days in Athens, Greece, where the great philosophers and great, you know, mind leaders and take the stage and everybody there that is present benefits immediately from it. Now, of course, they'll summarize the stuff and they'll have all the breakouts available. I think if you fill out the paperwork, you can get access to all the breakouts. So the technical stuff is it's archived, but the actual presence and feeling that kind of a, you know, it's like going to a concert. You know, you don't know what's going to come, you don't know what's going to be played next on a stage, but it's certainly going to be a top act.
So it is. And wow, what do you think of San Diego? Was that just an awesome place or what?
Well, it's sticky. That's why young people go out there and don't come back. And then the people that have successfully retired, that's a, you know, designation, because every day it's just, it's almost the same. So that reminds me of the Groundhog Day. It's, you wake up, it's 62 degrees, and by afternoon it's 76, and evening it's 68, and you can wear your clothes to count on it. I get a little bit of rain, I guess one or two days, but my daughter, they love it. It's so scenic. And California, I have to give them credit. They seem to really, truly want to make a viable effort to get along. The traffic's still horrendous, but people are so friendly and everything just like on upbeat. You know, it's like a different, it's like the sun makes everybody just a little bit, you know, more alert or a little bit more, you know, engaging. I don't know what it is, but it's a great place. I really enjoyed that venue.
You got to have the vitamin D. And special thanks to, we had a big time out there. Ken and I got to fill in. They have a thing called RealCom Live. They live stream interviews with the who's who of both the technology industry, but also the real estate industry. They got a fabulous guy that does this every year for them named Jerry. And Jerry's just the consummate pro. But even pros have to eat lunch. So Jim and Howard and Lisa asked Ken and I to fill in while they were while Jerry was having lunch, and that was big, big fun. Really enjoyed doing that, Kenny. And another thing, we are so honored, and again, thanks to the team at RealCom Ibicon. Ken and I actually got an award, and which just blew me away. I'm very humbled and grateful for it. Ken, why don't you tell me about our award?
Well, I'll tell you, it's the Digi Award. Excuse me. So it was ironic because I truly didn't expect it. I thought that there was two or three other names on that list that I thought were, you know, shoo-ins, and because they were going to get out two awards, they said this year on that. And it's the Julie Devine Digital Award. And when we got called out to Eric, I tell you what, like you said, it was a great surprise, and we were humbled because the people that were also nominated were, you know, icons in the industry. But it's just so much fun when you can actually do things that you like to do and make it germane to the day job. You know, as we always say, we have our, you know, day jobs, and then we have control trends. And control trends is labor of love. You know, we don't really generate any significant, you know, reward for it. But to be recognized in this media, you know, category, and we get more and more you know, credibility for being a media existence entity. We get invited to go to different things. But this was icing on the top of the cake. So I have it right here, by the way. And I look at it every day, just like the bobblehead there from ACI. Barry Gordon and the guys at ACI gave us that bobblehead. And I tell you what, so it's a lot of fun. It was really and truly, after an exhausting, you know, month of May and June, that was a great way to kind of capsize or, you know, put an end to it, put a period at the end of that time travel phase, and then to have that as a something important on the shelf. It was a great thing. What about you?
Oh, I completely agreed. Completely agree with that. It's been a whirlwind, and I got to just say a special shout out and thanks to Mark Petock from Linkspring. Mark filled in last week. If you didn't get a chance to see last week's show, Mark filled in for me, and Mark and Kenny did a marvelous job interviewing some of the really, really fascinating people we have not had on our show before. And you guys just did a marvelous job with that, Kenny. So really liked that. I was behind the cameras, running the cameras on that. And that to me was a really, really cool venue for Control Talk Now. And the week before we did it live at Cochran's Control Con. So we're kind of back in the studio, so to speak. But how was it having Mark as a co-host there, buddy?
Well, Mark's a consummate professional. He is... he's been doing the kind of the, you know, in front of the camera work for many, many years. In fact, he came out of Madison Avenue. He was marketing in New York.
He was at Studio 54 with Cindy Crawford and Andy Warhol and all those people, man. I tell
That's
you what
I mean.
Mark was back in the day when you – I'm surprised you guys didn't cross paths, Kenny, because back when you were dancing at the Electric Banana and all with your green bell bottoms on and platform shoes, Mark
You remember was, that. I'm surprised you remember
the lecture. Anybody forget that, man? Everybody in the industry talks about that, but, you know, you're doing that, and then Mark's over there got a private table with Bianca Jagger and Cindy Crawford and Andy Warhol and all those guys. Yeah, he's a Madison Avenue guy, you know, and
he's a lot of fun. And, you know, because, I mean, we talk about experience. We talk about, you know, when you get these kind of people together, I mean, the rate of, the rate of dissemination as far as like everybody that we were discussing business with reads all the papers, all the magazines, watches all the shows. And when you talk to everybody, it's like playing Trivia Pursuit on the last, you know, week to year in our industry. Like, did you hear about this? Did you see this? Did you whatever? So with Mark and these guys, it was a lot of fun because we had Rob Murchison, we had Jim McHale from Amores, we had the other gentleman's name was Tom Takasian from Murata, a Japanese firm, and he was another really sharp guy that's really interested in the North American markets, and they have some great products that if you watch the video, you'll certainly hear the passion he has for development and looking for partners and getting the product into the North American market. But yeah, Mark does a great job because he's just he's so fluent and he knows so much about it. And behind the lines, he actually does a lot of help. He gives people – he gave us all the support we needed back when we were starting up the Control Trends, and he serves as our master of ceremonies along with Kimberly Brown. Yeah, he's a lot of fun. What did you think? You were behind the camera. You saw it. You see the how he introduced the show. He obviously watches our show, and because he had it down to the nth degree, where, you know, the episode number and everything. So it was a lot of fun.
I think Mark is, like you say, he's a consummate pro, a great guy, and I think in this networked economy, we alluded to it earlier in the show, Kenny. It really is not so much, it's about what you know, but it's also about who you know. Mark knows everybody, and part of the networked economy, one of the rules that Marshall Thurber taught us was that in the networked economy, givers get, and Mark Petock is just a fantastic giver. Like I say, he helped us out. Mark knows everybody. He's a very knowledgeable guy. Linkspring's lucky to have him. Our industry's lucky to have him. So I'm glad Andy Warhol let him go, man. That's all I got to say.
I'm just looking back through some of the stuff. I'm just kind of, you know, putzing around here on the computer that's hooked up to the monitor here. But, I mean, this picture here of you talking to the receptionist, I believe she's in Las Vegas, and she introduced the Control Talk Now, remember?
She did. So that was I think, you know, there's a lot of things in this new economy, and this is why it's so important to have, you know, a trusted resource like a Paul Oswell or a good distributor. Is that, you know, there's certain things that work really, really well in theory, but in practicality, maybe not. But this is a trend we're seeing. So she's a receptionist in a box. She was apparently connected to like 50 sites at the same time. One of them was ours. She was in a little trouble hearing us. Tried to get her to introduce Control Talk Now, and she sort of did. But we're seeing more and more of that. And this is where it just gets really interesting in the times we're in, because you got Amazon, who is traditionally torpedoed brick and mortar, now starting to build brick and mortar. You got companies like CVS and Walgreens. And I mentioned this on an earlier show, I think, Kenny, that we were out in New Mexico a couple of months ago, and my daughter got sick. Instead of going to the doctor, because we're in New Mexico, we go to a doc in the box, and they diagnose Evelyn. She needs some antibiotics, and my wife goes, it's 2:30 in the morning. Where am I going to get any, you know, where am I going to get this filled? They go, just walk around the corner. She walks up to this thing like an ATM machine. She basically scans in her prescription, puts the credit card in, and it dispenses the antibiotics my daughter needs. So you kind of got to wonder, wow, you got Amazon building brick and mortar. You got these other people. This could, I mean, just completely revolutionize drugstores. I mean, what could that do to the cost of your drugs if you don't have to, you know, pay people to be there? You could, you know, leverage or ratchet up using something like a drug dispensary.
Imagine, I mean, like you're saying, because we saw 3D printing, and see, everybody thinks 3D printing is just, you know, like making widgets and you know, ball bearings up in space, but they're actually talking about using 3D printing for organic. So imagine you could get your drugs printed out right there at the same machine that you're being diagnosed with. So you put your hand in it, and the computer, you know, provides that analysis, you know, on site, or sends it back to home base. You're right. They find out you've got this, this, and this, and then they can print your prescription right there if they don't have the ability to dispense it, because they don't know what, you know, I mean, they couldn't have you might have 10,000 prescriptions in there, but you need something that's the 10,000 first, right? So now you're set back there. But what if they could print it there? I mean,
I think that's happening. And another thing we're seeing too, at least down in Atlanta, is you pull up to the ATM machine, your banks are in these little boxes right now too, where somebody like this virtual assistant comes on, and she might be in Las Vegas, she might be in Orlando, Florida. She handles all your banking needs. So now, instead of actually having to have real estate, a branch bank, you can actually just have, again, one person in a location that could, you know, be handling, you know, 15, 20, 30 different of these portable banks, if you will. So it's very interesting times, Kenny.
Meet the Jetsons, man. I'll tell you, we all laughed when we first watched that, but how many things have we watched, you know, with this what's his name? Philip K. Dick.
Yeah.
The incredible short stories he did now are all actually, they were movies first, but now we're actually seeing them as part of our lives, and we're dependent upon them. You know, this autonomous vehicle thing, I think, is really like, here's the robot.
Game changer, dude. Yeah. Well, so that was another thing too, Kenny. You know, if you go to the opening of last week's Control Talk Now show, I put a little bit of footage of some of the things we saw there. And one of them is me talking to a robot, right? I mean, this robot's going around, it's a security robot. And it's got the cameras built into it, and it can talk and all that stuff. And you basically monitor that. So now, instead of having to pay somebody to go out and walk your warehouse or whatever, if you still have one, you can have one of these security bots. And she said they didn't arm it yet, but it could come could tase you or whatever. But it's a passive
tasing
guard.
And then also light. There must be this new weapon that they sell it like as a bright flashlight. But apparently, especially in this environment with the security for dark areas and warehouses or whatever, this thing can shoot off a light that doesn't hurt you permanently, but so disrupts you and disorients you that you can't see for a while, and there's no pain, there's no voltage, there's no, you know, possibility of a stroke or anything. Maybe it'll blind you, but I mean, yeah, you're right. And I was in security. I worked contract security. I was in the Air Force security 9 years, and then contract security for 4 more. And the most one of the most depressing things I ever read was that if you take somebody, give them 8 hours of good sleep, feed them well or whatever, they come to work and assume post, and they're about 80% vigilant, you know, in their optimum state. So when you replace that with a camera that can do a camera on a robot that has mobility and can go open and close things and check and do physical evaluations, thermal evaluations, we saw another great thing about drones and how drones now in HVAC, more and more people are using them to do the outside analysis and do thermal imaging of a building. You know, and we got to talk to Automation Integrated with Jeff about that telephone pole or the utility pole that they do in Oklahoma. They go out there and a drone has replaced the vehicle, and the guy in the vehicle getting out doing a physical examination of the utility poles. Well, they have a drone that now can fly at a certain height and doesn't get in anybody else's way and can go out and do this thing, and it's 24/7. So, yep, I'm kind of excited about it. I don't know if I get enough
Yeah, no, but again, I mean, sort of, you know, the autonomous vehicle, I mean, getting to that, I mean, because Dave Smart talked about that in his keynote at RealCon IMACON, and dude, they've got it. They've got the trucks and all, and I think that's the first place they're going to go, is they're going to replace the truck drivers with these autonomous vehicles, because they can drive 24/7, right? And you don't have to worry about them falling asleep. So my question is, you know, you sort of eliminate, you know, the truck drivers, they're going to get eliminated. That means that the Uber drivers and the taxi drivers are going to get eliminated very, very quickly, because you're not going to need them anymore. You don't need any security guards. The sex bots are coming out, so all the prostitutes are going to be, you know, out of business. So my question is, I mean, what are you going to do with all these people that you know, are being replaced by machines?
Well, you know, it's going to take years and years, but the transportation industry, it's, you know, I look at the legal profession. They're saying that 70% of our lawyers are going to be useless here very shortly because
Wait a minute. 70% are useless now? I mean,
No, they're not going to have jobs, because they're going to have one. I mean, general law will be done from a central place for all 50 states at the same time without having individual presence anymore. Now, listen, here's the killer. How about Uber? And when you talk about things going around 360, there was an article, I guess, yesterday or the day before, where Uber now is finally getting their first, getting some, pushback from the whole world. And the CEO resigned, the founder CEO resigned. He'd already been kind of deposed by the board. And Uber now has to come up with ways. The Uber drivers want tips. So they're coming up with a tip application. And Uber drivers also want vacation. And they, you know, so here they eliminated basically destroyed the taxi industry. And, a lot of cities have a lot of money coming from those taxi industries. You know, they pay for a lot of bridges and they pay for a lot of stuff through the insurance. They sustain the insurance industry. So when Uber came out, they disrupted all those other means of continuous income or cash flow to municipalities, cities, whatever. So now we're seeing Uber finally getting the first earthquake within their concept. So it shows you how quickly things get in.
Right. But Kenny, I think that's a trend we're going to see. I think technology, I mean, we talked about the cycle. It just in our industry where a new product can come out, you got 15, 20 years and, you know, Uber comes out and man, they're already being obsoleted. It's happening. And as soon as these autonomous cars come out, they're done. Yeah. They are done.
Well, they're going to own it. What they're going to do is they're going to have Uber, and it's going to be the same concept. See, what Uber did, they're like the people that Google did and Gmail and Facebook. The biggest thing they have to offer is their list of customers, or their list, their database, And so Uber has all these people that are already familiar with that app. So whether you get picked up with an autonomous vehicle or a guy or a woman driving, it doesn't matter. Uber's still going to be the car that comes to get you. They're going to own all the cars on the road, probably. Right. That's what their end game is.
And I tell you what, the other trend that we're seeing, Kenny, and we've talked about on the show before, is that, I think Bitcoin is going to be the wave of the future. I think money is going to be obsolete. I think you're going to see Bitcoin, blockchain. It's a big buzz around RealCon, IBACON, how they're all starting to use blockchain because, now you got it's much cleaner. It can't be manipulated. You got a digital record signage right there. So,
Well, I'll tell you, we got a chance to talk to Lisa S. Stanley, the chief executive officer of OSCRE, OSCRE, which is an organization that it's an international organization. I'll tell you what, the things that she shared with us were amazing, about the blockchain and Bitcoin and how some of the banks, there's a federation of 80 banks that have already basically worked it all out, and we don't know it yet. There's a big plans for our future in the financial world, and how you're right. So all the people that are in the real estate industry, when you go to buy a house or sell a house, you got to go through 8 things and have surveys done again. You have to have all this duplication of effort. And once it's in this way, I understand blockchain is basically an impenetrable, permanent ledger of all transactions involving anything from real estate to anything you want, artwork, whatever. So it is incredible. Now, Bitcoin, to me, still is really kind of scary, because there's a book called Ready Player One, and I bought 3 copies. I read it and gave it to several other people, and it talks about, one day we're not going to leave our seats. We're going to put our virtual helmets on, and that's it. We're going to veg out and basically live on a diet that sustains a human body that really never moves. It travels, you know, virtually.
Dude, I mean, think of the Matrix, right? Wasn't that what the Matrix was all about? And Anthony Bronzo, our friend that sort of keeps up with this stuff, man, he is really big into the augmented reality and all that. He says, man, it's already there, man. They got the goggles and everything. And he says exactly what you're saying. He says, instead of the internet, is going to be probably be like one of these virtual reality things where you just agree. You sleep with your goggles on. I mean, we already got the wearable technology with the watches and stuff like that. You sleep with your goggles. So if I want to communicate with you, man, I'm not going external, man. I'll go through my goggles. We can look at the same thing. We're seeing it with the BIMS modeling already. So, I mean, it's here. It is absolutely here. It's just a matter of time before Ready Player One becomes a reality.
Well, Ready Player One's a movie. Steven Spielberg already has it going. It's coming out in 2018, but it's a little bit past the goggles. You actually put a suit on. So in other words, to get the full body effect, you got to have pressurized suits so you can feel, you know, you can feel the force of movement, and you can, you know, so the trip is just so unbelievable. It's like a dream. And they all go to, it's the guy, he's like a Bill Gates. He comes up with the ultimate game. And so, he puts $250 billion. His life estate goes to the winner of Ready Player One. Ready Player One comes from Pac-Man. That was the first thing it blinked. Ready Player One. If you remember Pac-Man, that's a very astute beginning, because that's the first digital game. It's first, you know, and it takes it all the way up to fighting battles in planetary, you know, places that are invented, but they're for real, because the consequences are for real. So,
but Kenny, you said something else too about, you know, a blockchain and Bitcoin and the real estate industry. I mean, just the residential real estate. You know that there is a whole group of people called loan processors. It's a whole industry. I mean, that's going to get wiped out by that. You're not going to need them anymore. That's another whole layer of workers that are no longer going to be needed. So, dude, I tell you what, it's interesting.
Well, what will happen? Like you said, I'll say it because you didn't say it. I gave you two chances because you're the one that told me the story. One day they're going to pay people to stay at home. You're going to get a fixed income, and 20% of the world's population will be involved in some sort of manufacturing or support role, and the rest of the 80% of it is not going to move because there's no reason to. You know, when you think about the work in our jobs, remember how the hardest thing to do is get to work, go through traffic, get into the office, and start your day. You know,
right?
And then you'd come home and you'd be late for, you know, a softball game or kids' tennis practice or whatever, because you had to fight traffic to get back home, right? And so in 20 years, we've seen that we don't necessarily have to make that trip into the office anymore unless we're actually, you know, physically required to do something physical or have a meeting. Meetings now are Skyping. I mean, you know as well as I do, probably 80% of your time now is to be behind your computer at a fixed time, not necessarily in a place at a fixed time, you know? So we've seen that transformation happen. And now, according to some of the things we saw at RealCon, IBCon, is this acceleration rate is going to increase to the part we're gonna have to have a seatbelt, you know, or you can just, you know, jump off. So I think our big push here for our HVAC industry is this is a perfect opportunity for us. This is, you know, every time you get a challenge, it can be either, you know, detrimental or it can be positive. I think for us, we're trying to say this is the greatest time, best opportunity to get back in the game as full force and pick the new sets of, you know, most important actions, resequence your whole daily activity and the people that you work with, that Pareto principle, so that, because, you know, if you're paying attention and you move correctly, this will be an opportunity to progress. And you won't be, you know, feeling like a victim and you got beat up and left behind. The disruption cycle basically canceled your job. You know,
well, one of the great Chinese proverbs is, with great chaos comes great opportunity. So, well, I think, Kenny, that might be as good a spot as any to start to wrap it up. Anything else you want to cover before we hop off?
Well, no, we have we had a lot of interesting posts. We covered them all. I kind of like the laissez-faire way we did this one here, because we don't want to get too predictable and too regimented. But there's a lot of great posts. We're working on trends. We're coming up with 2017. You know, we're seeing the good, the bad, the ugly again sort of thing. Because, I mean, cybersecurity, we had just – tons and tons of cybersecurity information from RealCon, IBCon. There was a 4-hour session at IBCon, the pre-con event, that we have a post on it, and we have a lot of interesting stuff. Would recommend people go get that off the RealCon, IBCon, you know, archive sites. we're seeing NIST impact, you know, and if we need a place to get started, we're seeing a whole transition of mentality where you're going to go and take a personalized version or view of cybersecurity, like your house. You know, you want to defend, protect, defend, respond. That three components there is what we're seeing come into and being amplified so that everybody feels interested and obligated to be participating in your organization's cybersecurity. So that was a big thing. Data. So we saw just 1,001 good things about that. It was and then the edge devicing is kind of making its way and taking its role in the data game by processing things at the edge. We're seeing sortation. There's no sense sending it up to the cloud and back when it could be when the information could be processed right there where it's needed immediately for immediate actionable information. And then we're seeing stuff like training young guns. And so the last three or four posts we put in there was making HVACR more interesting. It's a series we came up with. We saw several of the posts. One's a national signing day comes to the skilled trades. They're using like the momentum of the national signing day for high school students going to colleges, you know, how they sign and make a big deal of it. Well, one of the former dean there at one of the technical institutes said, you know, I used to be a basketball coach and we used to get kids all excited about national signing day. So now we'll make it more interesting by, you know, signing up our future tradespeople now can sign up. So it's a national organization, started as a kind of a, you know, trial error. But if you can see here, Washburn University.
How cool is that? Real quick, Kenny, just really, how cool is that? A signing thing. Cool. We need to get those guys on, man. That is a great idea. Very innovative, huh?
It's super cool. I mean, and so that was really neat. The next one we had was the trades, you know, just there's a competition, and we put the video up. It's making HVAC more interesting series. Number one, comfort in a flash carrier to join National Apartment Association's maintenance mania competition. And I don't know if you remember, but Honeywell once upon a time had, a competition, like putting direct coupled actuators onto a damper, to
excuse
open and close
me,
it.
That wasn't Honeywell. That was us, Stromquist and Company. We had it in Atlanta, and it was actually another vendor, Belimo, and it was in concert with the Olympics. And we basically had, we'd get people at the back of the, we trained them, and we get people at the back of the room, on your mark, get set, go. We'd fire a gun off. It'd run to the front of the room. We had stopwatches on. They would install like a direct coupled actuator on a valve or a damper. We had three or four different competitions. And after that, we gave them the awards. We played their song. They stood up. We gave them the medals. So thank you very much.
I hate to tell you that we did the same thing with Honeywell up in Pittsburgh here.
Where do you think they got the idea, Kenny?
Well, I didn't know that. In fact, I'm glad you told me.
We started hanging out,
Here, take a look at this. I'll tell you what, it's a great idea. And here, look, this is national now. This is televised. And I'll tell you what, these guys, they do like, this is for apartment maintenance. So they had, I mean, this is national competition where the fastest, best technical people, maintenance guys, have an Olympic thing where they're fixing toilets, putting in smoke detectors, doing all the things
that's
that they
awesome.
Do. The maintenance inside of the you know the
that is so cool. We got to get those guys on the show, man.
That was the second of it, and then the third one was just another great program where the American Boiler Manufacturers Association gave away, or I'm sorry, didn't give away. They had a scholarship making HVACR more interesting series. American Boiler Manufacturing Association Awards, ABMA 2017. 16 people got generous stipends for their college education, and it's you have to be promoted, you have to be sponsored by somebody who has to take up your cause. So the purpose and scope, the Randy Rawlson Scholarship Program was created for the promotion of careers in building in boiler engineering and fabrication. A special fund that was organized to support the scholarship program, and it's operated exclusively for charitable and education purposes. So I just think we're going to continue to see that as a trend, Eric, and we're going to do everything we can to sit, you know, dead middle on that, that we want to bring more positive attention to our industry. We need a lot of people. We put another post up there because, you know, Renee Joseph put that that white paper together back in 2016, but it was all from 2015, 2014, that the HVACR is the fastest growing industry in North America. It outseeded the fracking and oil industry by 100,000 places. So we need to keep doing what we're doing here because I think it's working. I think we're getting that critical mass. We're getting that tipping point where people now, we're going to all feel very comfortable telling these kids in 8th, 9th, 10th grade that there's absolute marvelous, opportunities. In fact, when you're talking about how are we going to put people to work, well, guess one of the areas that you can't have cyber this or artificial intelligence do that? That is the maintenance of our building and equipment. You're going to need good, solid, trained people. And if you watch that video, you're going to see something really interesting because the number of women and minorities are incredible. So we're seeing a lot of people taking advantage of this finally. And in 4 or 5 years, maybe some of these crisis numbers we're dealing with about us all, you and I will be able to retire in our proper times. And we want to keep working, huh?
Well, there you go, Kenny Smart. Well, that's encouraging, man. That's a great note to end the show on. So with that, special thanks to the man, the myth, the legend, and again, all the people that tune into the show. We really, really appreciate you guys, and have a great week. And remember, be bold, stay in control.
Indeed, Eric.
Indeed, Kenny Smyers.
Anybody in there?